I do not know the first damn thing about money except how to spend it. And I keep saying that like a joke, but I really need to learn. And so when I bumped into Euralis Figueroa, I was like, yes. She, talk about paying it forward and talk about bringing it full circle. Euralis works with teenage girls to help get them ready for the working world and for college and for great things beyond. Because, as you'll hear, a woman helped her. Euralis Figueroa.
I don't think any man is meant to be alone, or any human is meant to be alone. I think we are just an exchange of energy.
This is In Her Words, a podcast from manlisting.com, featuring one man listening to the stories of real women in their own words. In Her Words, a conversation worth hearing, because every woman deserves to be heard.
Hey there, hi there, ho there, and welcome to In Her Words, the podcast. We're at like episode 186, never missed an episode. And just powerful, powerful women and stories, and this week, no exception. Euralis Figueroa and I sat on a park bench by the choo-choo train in Freedom Park in Charlotte, North Carolina, one of the top destinations here. But it is loud, and so I apologize. You hear the cicadas, you hear the crickets, you hear the, especially a bunch of people yelling in the background because people were having picnics all around us. It was not too hot. So we had a delightful conversation and talk about somebody who is just transparent and funny and open and super smart. And we never once talked about her day job, which is as a senior vice president for global compliance and operational risk, whatever that means, but it sounds important for one of the big banks. But we talk about Euralis giving back in a huge way and about how women can really act as powerful, life-changing mentors for girls. Euralis Figueroa. Where were you born?
Oh, I was born in Stamford, Connecticut.
Has your mother ever told you anything about her pregnancy, labor, and delivery with you?
The only thing that she told me was two things. One was that I had the umbilical cord around my neck. So I think that means
that
I was breached.
That could be serious.
Yeah, and then, so I came out really, really red. Clearly I was, I guess, suffocating. And so funny story, it's all related. I go through her stuff from time to time, and it was years ago, I was going through her stuff, and I was like, why are there so many of my baby pictures? You know, in the hospital, they'll take baby pictures. She said, well, I didn't hand them out because I didn't think you looked so cute. I was just like, damn, mom.
Ouch.
And then that's when I learned about the whole breech thing too. And then another thing that she had told me was, I guess, so I was born in 84. So they were running some tests and there was a possibility that I may have come out with some type of disability.
That can happen.
And she was thinking about actually aborting me. Yeah. And then my brother, who's 17 years older than I am, told her, absolutely not. We will, whether this girl comes out disabled, I'm not going to say the other word, disabled, we will still love her for whoever she'll be, you know?
So and she was discussing this.
With my siblings, yeah. Yeah. Oh, with me, you mean?
No. I mean.
Yeah, she's, yeah.
How did you feel when you heard that?
I don't know, but I think I always go back to that, and I'm just like super grateful for my brother. And I don't think my mom probably would have gone through the abortion, but they always give you the option, right? Do you want to abort this child? And she's like, whoa, you know? But for me, it's just like that test, and then I came in, you know, breached, and it's just like, there must be a greater purpose for this young lady right here, you know?
Absolutely.
But I don't think I've given it a lot of thought. Like, I haven't really, like, reflected on it. Like, what does that mean? Or what does it mean to me or anything like that? But I think surface level is more of, like, okay, there may have been a possibility that I may not have been on this earth, so, but here I am.
Do you have kids?
I do not have kids.
No.
Yeah, I don't want them.
Yeah.
Sounds kind of selfish knowing that there's so many women out here that will love to have children and cannot. But for me, yeah, I made that decision. I think it was actually last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But by the same token, and we'll get into this, you help
a
tremendous number of kids. Now, where are you in the birth order?
I'm number 6.
Out of?
6.
So you're it.
I'm the baby. Yeah, I am the baby.
And how old was she?
My mom was 37 when she had me.
Okay.
So she was much older. Yeah. So my brother is 17 years older. So I have one brother and it's 4 sisters and then me. And my brother was 17 when I was born. My mom had him when she was 20 and had me at 37.
Oh my word.
I was not a planned baby, by the way. And she told me I was conceived on Christmas Eve.
And were you like, I don't want to know?
Yes, absolutely. And then she had like this smile on her face. I said, that's disgusting. Don't tell me anything more. Gross.
Under the Christmas tree.
Oh, God, don't say that. She did say it was on a couch. But
after mass. It was that candlelight mass.
I guess.
It gets you going.
I don't know. Lady's crazy.
I told, there are 2 of my 4 kids that I know because I've done the math and I know when they had to be conceived. Mm. And they're like, oh.
Yeah, it's too much information. Keep that private. Like, we don't need to know.
So you didn't have to take care of any little kids. You were taken care of by the sisters.
Absolutely, yes. But I also have nephews and nieces. So because there's such an age difference between me and my older siblings, my oldest niece is only 3 years younger than I am. And the one that followed her is 5 years. So they were like my little siblings, even though I was the auntie, you know. My mom took care of some of them. So I was around them for so long. Like we would play. I was always their teacher. I always wanted to be a teacher.
And you do kind of teach.
I do. Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. And we'll get into that. Yeah. Yeah.
So let me ask you, in school, and as a little kid, what kind of little kid were you?
Oh, I was a very studious kid. See, the thing is, my mom, education was really important. And we can get into that because I can tell you really about my story. But
well, I want to hear your story.
Oh, you
story.
Do? Okay. So
yeah, that's what this is
education
about.
Education was always important in my household.
Because?
Because she just wanted us to do well. But it was more of like, this was the narrative. You do well in school.
Uh-huh.
I need you to graduate high school, and then you can do whatever the hell you want. College was never part of that equation or that conversation. The word college did not enter my vocabulary until 1992.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
How old you were?
I was 8. Well, I was 7 going on 8. I think around. Yeah.
So why was high school so important, but college not so?
Because my mom, so let me give you a little story about my mom, a little backstory. So my mom grew up in Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
She grew up in the 50s. She was born in the late 40s, so grew up in the 50s. Where she lived, she was the second youngest, I think, of 13 children. And in those days, she lived in the countryside of Puerto Rico, and you had to pay to educate your children. And they were not very, they weren't poor, but they weren't wealthy either. And since my grandma had so many kids, they pulled her out of school because you only paid for the boys to go to school. And then the women were pulled out of school. So my mom went up to the 6th grade. She went up to the 6th grade. They pulled her out of school to teach her how to be a wife and a mother, basically, so she can help my grandma around the house. So I don't know if part of her pushing that education and making sure that we graduated high school was part of us fulfilling a goal or a dream that she may have had for herself. I don't know. Can't ask her now because my mom has Alzheimer's. So, and we'll get into that too, right? So I just remember her always saying, like, you have to graduate high school. Like, I need that diploma from you. You have to graduate. And so what happened was in 1991, there was this organization, a foundation that was created. It was called the I Have a Dream Foundation of Stamford, Connecticut. And what they did, it all started with Eugene Lang, who started the foundation, the I Have a Dream Foundation, back in 1981 in New York City. He was apparently like this very wealthy philanthropist, businessman, and he came back to his school in 1980, or his high school, I guess, or middle school, whatever school it was, and he was going to give a speech. And what he realized was that the kids were dropping out at alarming rates. And so he scratched his speech and was just like, hey guys, impromptu, I am going to provide you the resources. I'm going to make you a promise. I am going to provide you the resources, tutoring and mentoring, for you to be successful in school, for you to graduate, and then I will pay for your college. So fast forward 10 years later, 1991 is when they established the foundation in Stamford, Connecticut. And what they did was they adopted the incoming third graders from 1992 from this housing, low-income housing project, which is where I lived, called Southfield Village. And that's exactly what they did. They provided us with the resources, the tutoring and the mentoring, for us to be able to be successful, right? To get what we need, have the resources that we need in order for us to be successful, in order for us to graduate high school, and then they made the promise that they'll pay for our college. So the moment they planted that seed, everything was just like, game on. And that's when I was introduced to the word college, because that was not part of my vocabulary.
And so here you are, this little kid, 8 years old.
Yes.
And you hear that there's this thing called college. And how did that take root? Because plenty of people could say, I don't want to go to college. I want to go out and see the world. I want to, you know, go make money. I want to start my own business. I want to move in with my boyfriend, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily a dream of everybody.
For me, it was more like an opportunity to change my current situation. Even though, like, I didn't know it, but it was just having all these people, like, believe in you and being, like, your biggest fan and your cheerleaders and saying, I believe in you. You're going to do great things. And even though you come from, you know, this low-income housing project, you know, there's so much violence and crime and drugs around you and everything. And it's like, you know what it did? It gave me hope. Hope to actually be able to dream and realize that there's something bigger than these four walls or this radius or whatever you call it, like this neighborhood that I grew up in, that I could be more than just my environment.
When you say housing project, I didn't know that.
What that means? Oh, okay, yeah.
I didn't know. So what was that like? Where did you grow up?
So it was this housing development called Southfield Village. It's no longer there. They knocked it down. They started knocking it down in 1997.
Did you share a room?
Oh, yeah. So we had, well, in our first apartment, because my brother still lived with us, it was, well, from what I remember, at that age, I still had some of my sisters living with me, too. So we had four-bedroom apartment. And I felt like I had everything that I needed. Like, I never went without. Like, my mom, even though she did not make, she lived on a very low fixed income, that woman, I don't know how she managed. But granted, times two, we didn't have internet, right? She didn't have a car, so she didn't have all these additional expenses that we have today. But she was able to manage, and I always had food. I always had clothes. I always had clean clothes. My hair was always brushed, you know? I always looked well put together, because she was just like, oh no, like this is, she didn't use the word, this is your brand. You know, now we use those terms. But she's like, oh no, you're a representation of me. We need to make sure people know you come from a good household. Always had food. Like, I never went without. And then when my brother ended up moving out, I got his nice little corner room and it became my office. And one thing that I think back all the time, I always had an office in my house. Always.
You're a little kid.
Yeah, a little kid with an office.
With an office.
And then she bought me the chalkboard. I had all the cool chalks. I had the eraser. And then what I would do in school, I would take the papers. When we had an abundance of paper. And I would bring them back home. And then when my cousins would come over, I was their school teacher. I always wanted to be a teacher. It's so interesting.
And you taught them in the house.
Yeah, I taught them in the house. And then I would put my little dolls and I'll speak to them and my worksheets and yeah.
Did you have a realization, we're poor?
See, I always think back to that. I think, so the story I always go back to is, I think maybe when I was 12 years old. And I remember this because I was playing double dutch. And it was me and the girls from the neighborhood playing double dutch, because that's what we did. We always played jump rope and stuff like that. And I just remember hearing like a van, well, it sounded like a van come and just stop all of a sudden. And then you hear the door open, and then there's narcs coming out with these huge rifles and everything. And they're going to raid an apartment 4 doors down from me. And I was scared. I was like, what the hell? And I think that's the moment when I realized, why the hell do we live here? You know, like, this place is not safe. Why do we live here? And even though I felt safe in my four walls, like, my mom created a safe space for us in our home, but outside of that, I mean, there were gunshots, and nobody questioned where those firecrackers. We knew they were gunshots, you know? And we always thought, like, oh my God, do we need to duck? What do we need to do, you know? But anyhow, and I think that may have been the moment when I started realizing we live here because we don't have money to afford to live somewhere else.
Did your mom have to tell you that, or your brother, or your big sisters?
I don't remember. I think I had thought about it.
You put it all together.
Yeah, because you also got to think, so as part of the I Have a Dream Foundation program, I was mentored and tutored. And my mentor, Diane, who I met when I was 9 years old, by the way, we're still very good friends.
She's like a big sister.
She was more like a mom. She was like my second mom. And she always calls me to this day, she's like, I'm her chosen daughter, because she did not have children. But I saw the way she lived, and she was much more affluent. And so was my tutor, Barbara, who I met when I was 12 years old. So I started seeing the difference. Like, I come home and I see this type of socioeconomic, and then I see them, and I'm like, okay, I see the difference here. But why are we here, and why are they there? You know, so.
What were your extracurriculars in high school? What type of kid were you?
So I didn't do a lot of extracurricular because I had no form of transportation.
Uh-huh. Did you work?
I started working at 16.
Where?
I was working at the mall.
Uh-huh.
It was a store that I think they no longer exist, because I think they went bankrupt when I was working. Natural Wonders?
What'd you do with the money?
I saved it.
For?
Anything. It was to fund my future dreams. Oh, I became a big saver. From the earliest memory of money, I always saved my money. And I'll
so
tell
you didn't want to, like, get nicer clothes?
No,
or
I didn't
nicer
care for those things.
Purse or...
No, I didn't care for those things. For me, it was always experience.
Uh-huh.
And I always felt, so there was a little bit of guilt always, like, if I had to ask my mom for money.
Yeah.
And at 16, I was already paying, like, she put the cell phone under her name, I remember, and I would pay the bill. And that was her teaching me responsibility, right? And one thing my mom always told me was, always save for a rainy day. I was like, what the hell does that mean? You know, like, you don't really understand the meaning behind that. And then I was always a saver, and I would put things in an envelope. Any money that I got, I still have one from 1997, the envelope, and I would write down how much money I deposited into my little envelope and how much money I took out. So, like, for prom, senior year, or junior year and senior year, well, junior year, I borrowed somebody else's dress.
Smart.
I was very resourceful. And then senior year, with the money that I saved, I was able to pay for our limo. I was able to pay for, you know, the dress and my hair and my makeup and all this stuff. But yeah, I've always been a saver.
But you did want to go to prom.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to prom. Yeah. I went to like five proms. Oh yeah, and I recycled dresses.
Yeah.
It was okay.
Did you
no.
have a boyfriend, or did you
oh,
go?
Oh no. So no, I went with one of my best friends. We went in a large group.
Oh, that's mm-hmm. nice. That's nice.
Yeah.
But I mean, can you see that there are a lot of girls who are not self-confident enough? They would use all their money on clothing or fashion
yeah.
or something to telegraph that I'm, you know,
I'm
cool, I'm better, I'm
yeah.
worthy. Yeah, but you had that confidence.
Yeah, it was never, I don't know. My sister was more like, oh, I need the labels, because I get it. Like, in high school, kids can be mean, and if you don't fit in with them, you know. But yeah, I didn't care for name brand stuff. To this day, I didn't. I remember when I was younger, though, I wanted some name brand sneakers, and my older sister bought them for me.
Oh, fun.
And they made a world of a difference to me, and I thought I was like the hottest shit in town.
What brand?
It was Fila. Huh? I remember they were white and green, huh? And I thought I was the coolest girl. And then in middle school, my friends, we all wore Reeboks, like the same pair of Reeboks. We were like the Reebok girls. But we were able to afford those things, or I would ask my siblings to pay for those things. But I've never been, to this day, I'm not like a name brand person. Like the purse that I'm wearing right now is a $20 Target, you know, bag. I'm more now about experiences.
Like I think what I've always kind, been. What's an example of an experience?
Travel.
Oh, like where?
Oh, I've been all over the world, so like anywhere. Like my first trip out of the country besides Puerto Rico was when I was 19 years old. My mentor took me to Paris.
Oh my word.
And I fell in love with travel at that moment, and I said to myself, I am making a promise to myself. I will be traveling somewhere different every single year. And
this past year it was what?
Well, this year I went to Puerto Rico with my sisters. It was the first time ever, I think, that I went with all, well, one sister stayed behind, that I went with three of my sisters.
What part of the
country? We went to San Juan, and then we went to where my mother's from, San Sebastian.
Is it smaller?
San Sebastian, yeah. We're from this really small little town, or we call them barrios. And I was able to see like my aunts, well, no, I didn't. I got to see my uncle.
Uh-huh.
And because there's not that many of them living right now. And then I got to see like some of my cousins. And it's just very nostalgic for me.
Yeah. What is it that you most love about Puerto Rico when you're there? What is it that you really enjoy?
Woo! So Puerto Rico is a special, special place for me. And it's like this... it's this connection to the land, to the people, to the culture. And I think it's because it connects me even closer to my mother. Yeah. Like when I go to Puerto Rico, I get a little sentimental because I think like when I go back to like where she grew up, even though the house that she grew up was no longer there, I'm like, this is where my mom used to walk the streets. Like, you know, she would walk, she would go to the store, and you know, a lot has changed in 50 years or whatever. But I just feel so connected to her when I go to Puerto Rico. That is just something like I feel my soul. Like it's like I feel this deep, deep, deep like emotional connection to my mother. And I will sit there and I'll freaking cry. You know? It's to my roots because I sometimes feel that I got the short end of the stick because when we moved back, I didn't go back. So in 87, when I was three, we moved back to the States, and I did not go back till I was 16. And so I feel like all those years I missed, you know, that building that relationship with my grandmother. I didn't really know her. And she probably had like 100,000 grandchildren, right? Because there's so many of us. Fun fact, I am the youngest of 66 or 67 first cousins.
So it wasn't 100,000, but it was 67.
Yeah.
that's actually more meaningful.
Yeah.
So how many siblings were there in the...
I think there was 13 in total.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they produced 66.
Yeah, they...
So an average of more than five each.
Yeah, some had more than others, yeah. My mom had six, yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So you came from huge families and you were like... I appreciate that, I honor it, but I'm not going to be pumping out kids, 13 of them.
No, absolutely not. Times have changed.
Yeah.
I don't know who has 13 kids these days.
Yeah, that's true. Some, but it's very rare. Also, there's a generational thing, and that's what I'm seeing with my kids who are millennials.
Mm.
So are you an elder millennial?
I am, 84.
Do you identify as a millennial?
Yeah, I'll say if you have to put me in a box, yeah, I'll say I'm a millennial.
What do you think is the coolest and the best thing about the millennial generation?
I can only speak about the
yeah,
folks born in the 80s,
yeah.
Early 90s.
Yeah.
I think we grew up in a cool time. I mean, it was before the internet, really. You know, we actually had to play outside. You had to be creative and come up with you had to create your own games.
So you're not what they would call, quote unquote, digital native.
No.
Yeah.
No, because I was not introduced to the internet until probably like the mid-90s.
Do you think it helps you more in conversations like this one or in business relationships?
Yes. I'm all about building relationships.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. I can text. There's benefits to texting because I can have multiple conversations at once.
Uh-huh.
But they're not deep conversations that I would have to text, right? They're like these quick, like, hey, how you doing? Da-da-da-da. Yeah, okay. Very surface level. Let me check in on you. Let me just say hi because I'm thinking about you. Let me make sure you know that I'm thinking about you. But to me, I think when I turned 30, things changed for me and I started realizing how I wanted deeper relationships with people. Like, I wanted a deeper connection. I was tired of the surface level. So I'll give you a little story. So when we were in high school, I have friends that I've had since high school. And I remember one time we were all going through stuff and we're all like bitchy to each other and we were like actually beefing. We're all mad at each other and we decided to do like a mediation meeting. And then we were all talking and that's when we realized we don't know anything about each other. We don't know what happens in our houses once we leave school. And everybody was like opening up on all the things that they were going through. And we were just like, oh my God, like we're all going through some deep shit. How do we support one another? And granted, we were still very young and then we became each other's therapists, which is probably not the best thing because then you form dependency or codependencies on people and things like that. But that's when I started realizing like, it can't just be the surface level shit. Like, I don't think any man is meant to be alone or any human is meant to be alone. I think we are just an exchange of energy. And that's who we are.
You haven't mentioned your father. Did you grow up around your father? Did you know him?
I know my father, yes. So my dad exited my life when I was three. My mother and my dad separated. They were never married, but they were together for like 12 years. So they separated when I was three. And I do remember him coming because he still lives in Puerto Rico. And he would come and try to visit. And then there was, I remember him taking us out, me and my sister. So there's six of us, four of them share one father, and me and my other sister, who's 3 years older than me, we share the same dad. And that was a very interesting relationship because he would send those greeting cards and things like that. And then he ended up remarrying, having more children. And I remember my mom, I don't know what age I was, but he came to visit and she made us choose whether we wanted to see him or not. And she like called, I still remember like that shit was, it's ingrained in my brain, like that memory. I remember him being in his car, I think with his new wife, and my mom standing there at the door and saying to me and my sister, come right here and let me ask you a question. Do you want to see your dad? And I'm just like, no, because I thought that was the right answer. But then I remember after that, like running upstairs and looking out the window to see if he left or not. Can't tell you anything that I felt after that because I don't remember, but I always thought it was so unfair. You know, being an adult now, saying, damn, mom, why'd you make me choose? Because I probably would have wanted a relationship with him. But he is not a good person, I will tell you that, and I've come to know that.
What does that mean?
Oh, he's not a good person. Can't get into it, but he's just not a good person. He's not a good person. And in 2019, me and my sister went because for a long time, you know, my mom did tell us that he was a piece of shit and all this stuff and how he forgot about us and all that stuff. And then I didn't realize that I was experiencing abandonment issues until one of my ex-boyfriends told me that the reason I don't know how to treat a man is because I don't have a father in my life.
And yeah, how did you react to that?
Oh, I was pissed, and I cried. And then that's when I started thinking, wait, is this true? Maybe, you know. But anyhow, so in 2019, my sister and I decided to go to Puerto Rico and visit him. And my sister had not seen him in God knows how long, over 20 or maybe 30 years.
Now, your brother was in your life, right?
Oh, yeah, my brother, yeah.
And so, your brother's a good dude, right?
I love my brother.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
So, is your default setting, because I heard my daughters and my wife say this, most men are blank. Mm. Most men are dogs. Mm. Or most men are pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
What's your...
Mm. They're complex creatures. If you would have asked me maybe 10 years ago...
That's a cop-out answer.
No, because I don't like to generalize, and that's the thing. Like, see, my mom did not have a good life. My mom was a victim of domestic violence. And so her attitude, she never dealt with any of her traumas or anything like that. She never dealt with any of her traumas, and I feel like she kind of passed that on to us. And one of them was, all men are dogs. All men are going to cheat on you. All men are assholes. You know, all the things that they are, that she believed they are. So you start adopting those beliefs, but I realized that that's not always true. There are good men out there. I've met really good men. So I can't just say, hey, all men are this.
But you also seem comfortable in yourself. Like you don't need, you're not needy. You don't need a man.
No, because that's what my mama taught me. My mom, one of the important lessons that she taught me was don't ever depend on a man, right? And don't depend on anybody. You have to be self-sufficient. You don't have a safety net. No one's there to catch you.
But by the same token, you had this group of girlfriends that you all had this epiphany. Hey, we need each other.
Absolutely.
Like, we can't be therapists for each other, but we need to be around each other.
Absolutely.
That's good. That's smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you can even support one another.
Huh?
You can support one another.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I...
The community is
absolutely
important.
Oh, community is very important.
Yeah, but you get to choose your community.
Oh, I do, yeah.
So what do these women that are closest to you, that know you best, what do they have in common?
Mm.
How have you chosen this particular group?
Mm. So these girls, I mean, they've been in my life for a very long time.
Like,
and it's not just
long?
The high school. So I have several different groups. So like my core since... high school.
Mm.
And they're honest with me. Like, they're brutally honest with me.
Like
in
what,
a very loving way.
What's the kind of thing they would say?
So, I had one friend who taught me one of my biggest lessons. Because I was going through a really bad breakup. This is where the unveil came. And she said to me, sometimes you have to face yourself in the mirror. And whatever decisions you make or choices you make, you at the end of the day, you are the one who has to live with them. And I know it sounds like something that I probably should have known or anything like that, but that was one of the things that she said to me. And to this day, I think to myself, okay, it's time for me to face myself in the mirror and see, do I like the person that I am? You know, am I, it's most, what it is really self-reflection.
Y'all do the bubbles over here.
And what things did you decide about Uralis that you really, really do like? And what things did you say, I need to let that go?
Whew. That's a tough, I mean, so.
What's the best thing about Uralis?
I think my discipline and my determination. Like, I am, there's so many things that I can say. And that's always a tough one to talk about myself in that light. But for me, I love the fact that I am compassionate. And I love the fact that I can connect to people and bring people together. Like, I noticed that is one of my core strengths. It's always been. I've always been the nucleus of my friendship groups. I've been the nucleus of my family. Like, in 2015, I did a family reunion in Florida, and I had over 100 people there. And I had one cousin who told me that he had not seen any of his cousins in over 20 years. And he was crying in tears. And he said, you have a gift. And I am forever grateful for what you just did for me. And I was like, oh. Of course, I started crying. But I was like, wow. So I would say, like, for me, it's just connecting with people. I am very, when I have my mind set on something, oh, I'm going for it. I'm very resourceful, and that's one thing I think you learn, especially when you grow up in poverty. You learn survival, and you learn how to be resourceful. But the things that I, the thing that I would love to let go of is the self-critic. That person is the person who will say, no, Euryalus, you're not ready for this. Oh, Euryalus, you didn't say the right thing. Oh, Euryalus, you know, this ain't for you. And I'm realizing more and more that that's that negative self-talk. And that's the that insecure part of me. See, the thing is, I had to learn how to love myself. And I had to learn to accept both the beautiful parts of me and what I consider the ugly parts of me. The flaws, the things that I, because it's, I was always striving for perfection. And I had to realize, no, Euryalus, there's no such thing as a perfect human being. You are going to be everything that you are. And I had to learn how to love myself.
What was most wounding to you growing up, like before the age of 18?
I'm going to tell you the first thing that came to mind.
Which was?
Is when certain people were telling me, this is before high school, when I was in middle school, that people were not going to like me in high school because I was such a bitch, and that I was going to get beat up all the time because I'm very sassy and I have a bad attitude.
Were you kind of a smart aleck? Were you?
I think it was more of the fact that...
You were confident?
I was confident, but also the fact that I didn't really agree with the environment that I was growing up in. There was a lot of dysfunction. Now I can articulate that now. Then at that age, I can't use the word dysfunction or trauma and all these things. But it was just, the situation was just a little tough. And of course, my automatic survival and defense mechanism is going to kick in. And I'm going to teach, I'm going to treat you the same way you treat me. And I'm going to respond the way you respond to me, because that's the way I was taught. So in my household, we never learned how to communicate. Everything was always swept under the rug. You would piss me off, or you would say some hurtful shit to me, and it was, you have to forgive these people, or you just, not even forgive, it's not even forgive, you just, it's more forget. You just sweep it under the rug. We don't talk about how you hurt my feelings, you don't talk about my feelings at all, you know, and it's just, you just continue just moving on, and, well, not really moving on, but you're continuing with the day, the next day, and everything, and it just becomes like this. All this shit just becomes so heavy, and you're carrying all this shit with you.
Did you get in fights?
Absolutely not. I am the most non-confrontational person.
So did anybody ever come after you?
Absolutely not.
So it didn't happen?
No, absolutely not. This is what they
told
me.
And so they were giving you bad information?
They were telling me that this is what my life was going to be like. And I'm like, no, it's not. Because at school, I am a very loving person. I'm loving at home too, but people aren't pissing me off at school.
Yeah.
You know? And in school, like, I had a lot of friends. I was popular, you know? Like, I was liked. I never got into a fight. I never was one that was into gossip or anything like that. I was the nerdy girl, the cool nerdy girl, because everybody knew Euryalus is going to college. Euryalus has a bright future. I mean, even my teachers would tell me.
Now, you are making a difference in young people's lives now. Mm-hmm. Who made a difference in your life, personally?
Yeah, so besides my mom, it was my mentor, Diane. Diane really showed me... Diane is an amazing, amazing woman, and I always called her my guardian angel.
Mm-hmm.
Because she showed me a whole different world. Like, she was the one.
Got a bug.
Oh,
right
no.
There. It's a lightning bug.
Oh.
Okay, sorry.
It's okay.
Diane showed you.
Showed me, like, a whole different way of living, and she was just always so positive. Like, it was always some positive energy, and she was always pouring into me about how great I am. Mm-hmm. And all the great things that I'm doing, all the great things that I will do, how she's so proud of me. Like, she was always that cheerleader on the sideline, cheering me on. Yes, Euryalus, you're doing the thing. Go, girl, you're doing this. I'm so proud of you, all this stuff. And so was Barbara, who was my tutor.
How are you a mentor in young women's lives now?
Yeah. So I actually work with a local nonprofit here in Charlotte.
Called?
Circle de Luz. And
which means?
Circle of Light. And they're actually celebrating their 15-year anniversary this year. And it's a very similar program to What Saves My Life. And they start the girls in seventh grade, and they provide them with the resources.
So what does that mean?
The resources. So I'm one of four class captains. So I'm the class of 2024. So my beautiful eight girls are graduating next year. But the program, basically, we do programming every single month during the school year, and it's different things. It's get them exposed to different things. So like recently we went to see Aladdin on, oh my God, it was amazing. And I had seen it before in New York City when I was in New York. And we did dinner.
The Broadway show.
We do go to college tours. We do volunteering work. We do a lot of like, I wouldn't call self-help, but like self-esteem classes. We talk about love, healthy relationship, boundaries. We talk about life, basically. And I love this program because it's like I said, it's very similar to the program that I have. So the girls have to, once they graduate, they're guaranteed a $5,000 scholarship. Which sounds very familiar, right?
Yes.
To the program, I Have a Dream Foundation. And the way I found this program was through one of my friends. I've always wanted to be a mentor, tutor, because it was my way of paying it forward. And can I share one thing?
Oh, share whatever.
So when I was going through therapy, I've always had this feeling that I wanted to be a mentor. I had to pay it forward. But I always had but excuses, right? But this, but that. And my therapist asked me, she said, I want you to write this down. I was like, okay. She said, what would have happened if Diane and Barbara felt the same way you do right now? What if they decided that they did not want to do this? Because of all these reasons that you're making, or these excuses that you're making. And that shit was like, holy cow. And so I started with the Big Brother Big Sister program, but that didn't work out. So when I moved to Charlotte, I was like, I want to find a program, and Circle of Loose was it. And I've been working with them since 2021, I think. Yeah, so it's been 2 years, and I love it.
So have you seen or met some of the young women who have gone off to college?
I have. One of the board members, she's one, I think, of the original students, or from the original class. And she's doing pretty well for herself. And I was just like, wow, like, this stuff does work. I mean, my life is a whole testimony of how this works.
And is it all women?
And this one, it's targeted to Latinas. Mm-hmm. So it's eight Latinas, all first generation. And they're just such amazing girls. Like, I honestly
by first generation,
them. First
like
generation
you.
College, yeah. Like me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So your mom immigrated and you were born in the USA.
Yeah. But it's more also like first generation going to college, mm-hmm. like pursuing a
and
secondary
what,
school.
Everyone faces their own distinct challenges. But what do these Latinas share in common?
I think one is the language barrier.
Mm.
So what I found, they did a study, and what they were seeing is that a lot of the girls were absent from school because they had to help translate for their parents.
Mm.
Or they may have younger siblings who they have to take care of because their parents are working. Mm-hmm. And they're mostly working very long hours. So that's definitely a challenge that a lot of the girls go through.
And there's the feeling, if you move away, if you go to college, how am I gonna get by?
Yeah, that's the tough part. Because yeah. Because I had older siblings, they translated for my mom. My mom never learned English. But being first generation to go to college, you almost feel like you don't fit in either world.
Mm.
It's almost like, which world do I fit in? Because when you go back home, now you're too educated, or they think that you're too good, even though I'm still a very humble person. We've overcome this, but this was in the beginning. I realized they would be like, oh, you speak a certain way, or you act a certain way, you acting different. And I'm like, huh? And then because my first job was on Wall Street. So here comes this girl from the projects
So wait a minute, where did you go to college?
I went to Iona College, which is now called Iona University.
Okay.
In New Rochelle, New York.
And what did you study?
I studied finance.
Okay. And what was your job on Wall Street?
I was working at the New York Stock Exchange in their member firm regulation department. So at 22, I was sitting with C-suite individuals telling them what they were doing wrong.
That takes chutzpah.
Oh, I was scared.
That takes some backbone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what did you learn about these people?
That they're just human beings just like I am. Like, I had to tell myself anytime that I had to report. You know, when you're reporting good stuff, it's fine. But when you have to tell somebody, hey, you're violating this rule, this regulation, you really have to be confident and just realize that I'm talking just to another person. They put their pants on one leg at a time, just like I do.
And did they get defensive?
Oh, man, there was one guy in Houston who told us we were on a witch hunt because it was the first time that we were reviewing his books and records. And oh, my God, that was
white guy.
That was intense.
Is it a white guy?
Yeah, it was a white guy.
Yeah. And so there's an age difference, right?
Yes.
There's a money difference.
Yes.
And there's a ethnic difference.
Yes.
And there's a gender.
Yeah.
So all of it.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And how were you able, what did you learn about that situation?
How to deal with confrontation, because I'm not really good with confrontation, but just having someone go off the hinges and you're just like, I had to learn how to stay calm and not, like, escalate to his level, his energy level, because he was just so upset. Mm-hmm. And I'm still very new. It was the first...
I've been that guy.
You were the mean guy? Oh, man.
Sometimes. I'm sure I have.
I mean, it is what it is. But, I mean, I had a team. It wasn't just me. I mean, I was, like, new. Mm-hmm. Right, and I got coaching from my managers, and of course they stepped in, because I mean the guy called me into his office to tell me that we were on a witch hunt, and I was just like, we're not on a witch hunt, sir. Like, we're just doing our job. And I don't remember every detail of it. I just remember leaving there and be like, holy cow, this man is pissed. This exit meeting is going to be a shit show. But I had the support of my managers and the directors, the more senior people on the team.
And how did it resolve?
Well, he had, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't remember, to be quite honest, but at the end of the day, we're the regulators.
Yeah.
So.
But I mean, he's not in prison. It's not
business. He wasn't. No. It was like minor stuff. It was not anything serious. Oh, no. It wasn't like he was violating.
When people take it personally, you know.
Oh, he definitely took it personal. You would think that we were talking about his mother. Mm-hmm. That was intense. I still remember that.
How do I resolve this? How do we resolve it?
Yeah, how do we work together? I'm like, I'm not the enemy.
Yeah.
Even though they always saw us as the enemy.
Yeah. And so what are you now able to translate to these young women, these teenagers, by virtue of that? Still a lot of old white men out there with a lot of money.
Yeah.
So how do you?
So what's interesting is I'm going to answer your question, but I'm going to flip it a little bit, because some of my girls feel like they don't belong.
Hmm.
And so that's one of the things that we're working through. It's like, you do belong in these spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And it's understanding that you are who you are. You bring your whole self. You have a special uniqueness to you, and the world deserves that. You know?
That's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And so, because I've been there. I've been there, but for me, it was always more of a social economic thing. Mm-hmm. I never thought about it as a race or ethnicity thing until now that I'm older. But for me, it was always like, there's certain spaces that don't make me feel comfortable.
Like?
Greenwich, Connecticut does not make me feel comfortable. Walking down Greenwich Avenue, I'm just like, ugh, this ain't for me. This ain't me. This is not where I belong.
What part of Charlotte do you live in?
I live, I guess it's considered South Charlotte.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You like it?
Yeah, I love it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why?
It's peaceful.
Do you feel like you belong there?
Absolutely. I own that bitch. Yes. I'm just kidding. But yes, I do feel like I belong there.
Where do you want to travel this year?
So I'm actually going to Paris this year.
Going back.
After 20 years.
Yeah. And if you had the last trip you could ever take, where would it be?
Bali.
Have you ever been there?
Yes. I went to Bali in 2017, I think it was. Life changing.
Would you like to do a conference there or something? Or do you just want to visit?
I would like to just live there.
Well, then why not?
Not right now. There's certain things that my mom.
Yeah. Where does she live?
She's in Connecticut still.
Uh-huh. How often do you see her?
Oh, every other month.
Wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
You fly up?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What a good daughter.
Oh, thank you.
Is she at the point she still knows you?
No.
No.
So she doesn't know me by name. But
she knows you're her daughter? She knows your family?
I don't know. She knows that we're family, and she definitely trusts me. You can tell by her behavior, her mannerisms and things. I don't know if she knows who I am. I don't know if she's oh, this is my beautiful baby daughter, you know?
What's her living situation?
She lives at home. She has 24-hour care.
Mm-hmm.
Thank
are
you,
your sisters
State of
near
Canada.
There?
Oh, yeah. My sisters are there. Most of my sisters are involved. We're a team of four. I'm a remote caregiver. Mm-hmm. So when I go there, I try to give my sisters a break. So I run all her errands, do all that stuff. And sometimes I run errands from here. Thank God for online shopping, right? So I don't have to go to Walmart or Costco and buy detergent. I can do a lot of the stuff to make my life easier. Because what happens when I go there, it's all about my mom. And no one else exists in my life. Which is kind of hard, right? Because I have friends that still live there and I would love to see them. But sometimes I am not in the mental space. I cannot give you my undivided attention because I'm not present. It's hard for me to be present sometimes because I'm so focused on my mom.
Yeah. If we got struck by lightning today and the only thing that survived is this little piece of audio, what is your legacy?
Ooh, my legacy. I don't know. I mean, I hope I touched or had a great impact on people's lives. And it's interesting. Can we talk about purpose real quick?
Please.
Okay. So, I've always, given what I told you in the beginning about my mom and, me having the umbilical cord around my neck and stuff. I feel like I have a great purpose and just how the stars have aligned so perfectly for me. I think there's something bigger there. And sometimes what I feel is that as people, we don't know the impact that we have on others. Unless somebody tells you. And I've had people tell me how much I've changed their lives just by the things that I've done or the things that I've said to them. And that, and sometimes I'm impact does not need to be for the masses. It could just be for the people that you talk to day to day. I can smile at somebody on the street and change that person's life. Who knows, right? I won't know because that person may not come back to me and tell me. But I guess, to answer your question, my legacy is I just hope I have a positive impact on people's lives where that can multiply and people will feel like they need to pay it forward as well.
Who knows you best in this world? Better than anyone?
Me? No.
Other than you.
I don't want to give names, but I have maybe a handful of friends, plus Diane, and then my sisters.
If they got up at a memorial, what would they say about you?
I love that one. I'm curious to see. Wow. I think they would say how much they love me. And
what did they love about you?
I think it's my heart. I'm generous in a sense, and I like to share information. I want the best for people. I am my friends and sisters, biggest cheerleaders, supporter. You know what I mean? That's an interesting question. I wonder what they would say about me, but
you strike me as encouraging.
I am very encouraging. I am.
Uplifting.
Very up. Yeah.
Supportive.
Yes.
inspirational.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Because by example, you show these people.
Absolutely.
You can go to college.
Yeah.
If that's what you want.
Yes.
You can travel.
Yes.
You can teach.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, I had one friend who told me, we had a very difficult conversation, what we call courageous conversations at work, right? And I had to be honest with her and tell her to her, you know, that she needed to change certain things about herself and whatever it was. And to this day, she tells me, I am so grateful for that conversation. Even though I hated you at that moment for telling me the truth, you helped me change my life. Because it's all about changing your mindset. And I'm not saying I'm a perfect being. I struggle with stuff too. I still deal with imposter syndrome and all that stuff. But, and I'm not here to say because it happened for me, it will happen for you too, right? Because like you said, we can all choose different paths. But it's just uplifting people to know that there is a purpose for them, that they're here for a reason. Like, you weren't selected by God or some divine, you know, whoever, whatever we believe in, for no reason. And then that your environment, like, you don't have to be a product of your environment, that there is a way out, in a sense.
You can choose your own story.
Yeah, you can choose your own story. I like that. Yeah. You're the author of your own story, and you choose whether you want to continue the same chapter or if you want to flip the page and start a whole new chapter. It's okay. Change is okay.
You probably know what you would tell Uralis at age 8.
Ooh.
Yeah. And you probably know what you would tell Uralis at 18 and also at 28. What would Uralis at 80 tell Uralis at right around before you get 40?
I hope she says thank you. Thank you for, ooh, this is emotional. You just did something to me. Like, ooh, okay. So for I would hope that she would say thank you. Thank you for believing in yourself. Thank you for living outside of your comfort zone and taking on risk. Thank you for all the experiences, all the laughter, and for truly being who you were destined to be. Thank you.
I really honor you, Uralis, and I thank you for sharing just a little bit with me.
Thank
you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. This was fun.
I think the biggest compliment I can give Uralis is she reminds me of my oldest daughter, and who is also a powerful woman and who also gives back in a myriad of ways. Different ways, but a myriad of ways. Uralis, thank you.
In Her Words is a production of the Queen City Podcast Network in cooperation with Balto Creative Media. Allison Andrews at Andrews Creative, Rachel Clapp Miller and Roshonda Pratt are developmental producers. Sally Higgins at Higgins & Owens tries to keep us legal. Our music is A Day at the Park by the group Pictures of the Floating World. Your announcer is Catherine Smith. That's me. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and take a moment to rate and review. It really helps others find us. If you love us, go to our Patreon page at patreon.com. Look for Man Listening, one word, no spaces. A small investment makes a big difference in lifting up the voices of women.
A huge shout out and thank you to everyone who has supported this podcast, In Her Words, manlistening.com, or voicelocket.com from the very start. Thanks so much.
Thank you for your support. We believe one voice can change the conversation. Thanks so much.